I don't. I wish he was here, and I hope it would be put in the record, that I assure him I have done this, not with any desire at all to belittle his work, but on the contrary, because it seems to be one of outstanding merit and importance, and therefore a worthy target. Now, I agree with a very large proportion of what he says, but unfortunately not with what he says about democracy. It's not his purpose to deal directly with this subject, but in the course of discussing other subjects, he gives a definition of democracy which seems to me to be misleading and wholly inadequate. It's not his definition, and he never takes squarely unless he agrees with it. It is taken from what always seems to be a rather unenlightened book by Ortega y Gasset, who defines democracy as a method of government, namely by majority rule. This is what my good friend Manuel Arriaga, with his characteristic language, calls statistics. Now, one of the many charming characteristics we have met people is its willingness, after a long period of argument, dispute, and often mutual abuse, once a vote is taken, to abide loyally by it. And this no doubt portrays a democratic spirit. But it does not by itself constitute democracy. The main purpose of my paper is to suggest that democracy is something more than an attitude of election to 51%. I've tried in my paper to explain what I understand by democracy, and I don't propose to elaborate on that. But perhaps I may illustrate what I have in mind by an example. We have at the moment in England a commission to realign county boundaries. And this commission proposed inter alia to allocate to Gloucestershire a small part of Oxfordshire, which is my county, which small part stuck out into the other county, the sort of protuberant peninsula. One village and a few cows were affected. And in good democratic tradition, the opinion of the village was sought. After a series of meetings, it became apparent, though no vote was taken, that opinion was seriously divided. And on that account, the village refrained from expressing any views. However, pressed by the Boundary Commission, the village held a final meeting at which it feared it might be forced to put the issue to a vote. At this meeting, all the old arguments, pro and con, heard so often before, were repeated. And as the chairman was about to tap the table and call for a vote, an old man with a long white beard and gnarled hands got up and said, "Folks, I've listened to all that you've said, but you've never said the one thing which is important." And pointing a crooked finger at his audience, he went on, "I've lived longer than anybody else in this room, and I know Oxfordshire is a much healthier country. If you want to live as long as I have, don't make a change. Don't join that country where we all die young. I'm old and I know." Completely convinced by his superior knowledge and experience, the whole meeting desperately afraid of the manners of its neighboring country, rallied to his view. I believe is the essence of democracy. It is self-rule, which means self-restraint and self-control. And we all know that no individual can control himself unless he is inspired by certain ideals, certain principles of conduct, and a certain ethic. And the same is true of any group of individuals. For self-government to succeed, the group must be inspired by certain ideals, certain principles, respect for the views of others, and a certain ethic. And democracy can only flourish when an ethic is so deeply rooted that it is the ethic and not the momentary desires of one individual or another, or one majority or another, determines its existence. That is why my village refrains from taking a vote. In one sense, therefore, democracy is fundamentally and inevitably absurd. The question before us, however, is not whether democracy is conservative, but whether it is liberal and whether its ethic and liberal principles conform or clash. I try to argue that in fact they conform. That both the liberal and the democratic ideal is the harmonious function of the individual in a harmonious society, a healthy society. And perhaps after all my belief is not as absurd as it seems. What the old man had really done was to inspire all of the villagers with a sense of pride in their community, a sense of belonging. And it is only when you've got that community sense that democracy can really be in flourish. Now, I do not propose to bore you by repeating my reasons for believing that liberal and democratic principles conform. I want to get on to a point at which there would seem at first sight to be an evidence. And this Thursday, antipathies has in recent years become apparent owing to claims to so-called economic and social rights elaborated if not advocated by the United Nations. As a result of a strange alliance between the communist states and certain democratic governments, claims redolent of the welfare state. I say not advocated because other democratic countries, the United States and the United Kingdom, for instance, view these claims at any rate as originally formulated to be greatest to this meeting. This collection of claims is a typical international compromise. And it's a curious possible of historic claims to, for instance, property and education and new claims, all of which are
it can only perform its duty.
By controlling the whole economy, telling each individual what work he shall do, what he shall earn, where he shall live, how he shall clothe himself, and still work, how he shall clothe his wife. And that is all what? Danger. And it is at this point that I see that liberals feel or felt that if the claims to such rights are an expression of democracy, then the Democrats must part from it.
And that is the left in the text of what the communists want.
The facts, however, they are not an expression of democracy, but a muddle game. They are a confusion between aspirations and rights. They are very natural. After the Great Depression of the 30s, still more after the war, the mass of people were afraid and the force accustomed to control. They were camp conditioned and human. They had lost their jobs in the Depression, and many of them those they loved in their homes in the war. And inevitably, they sought security at any price. But as I venture to think, ladies and gentlemen, is past history. It's no longer true. There is today a heartening revival of a demand for freedom rather than for security. But see them on every side. We in England are moving away from direct control to more liberal measures designed to influence a market through price, through interest rates, through monetary policy. Our Chancellor of the Exchequer has even sought and obtained powers to tax the employment of labour. And although this proposal seems to be wholly absurd, it is a very significant shift from employment at any price. I personally welcome it as a benefit facility. But we are left alas after long years of controlled welfare, not really ruling ourselves, nor ruling by majority, but ruled by a bureaucracy which, though it proliferates like soldier flies on a compass, is still a minority. By a bureaucracy vainly manipulating a mass of moribund regulation. The liberal winds of recent years are health-giving, but they have not been strong enough so far to sweep away the barricades and freedom set up during the first decade after the war, a decade influenced primarily by fear. And until they do so, full democracy, real democracy, based not on regulations and decrees, but on mutual respect and on self-restraint, will be confined to such rare and enlightened communities, my office and it is up to us as good liberals to explain it tonight. Shall we succeed? Perhaps we shall. But we liberals suffer and always have suffered from a strictly middle class exclusiveness. I will not say snobbish. And so we distinguish a certain unction between liberals and democrats. Dare I say between the elect and the elect.